UPS Monopoly, Boy Scouts of America Monopoly, Monopoly, the Century of Flight Edition, QVC Monopoly, do not pass go unless you collect these shiny carbon knives. Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxtay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Roald Dahl once wrote that life is more fun if you play games, but Dahl clearly never played the hybrid game of chess boxing, the real game where you intersperse rounds of chess with rounds of boxing. Chess boxing bouts are very often decided by the ever-crucial decision of which round comes first. I'm pretty sure that Garry Kasparov wouldn't stand much of a chance against Floyd Mayweather in boxing chess. Of course, there should be more hybrid games. High jump limbo. One game gets easier as the other gets harder. Or roulette, Russian roulette. Spin the wheel, then spin the barrel. And musical chairs, musical statues. An extremely tricky game where participants move around until the music stops, at which point they must remain standing stock still while rushing back to their chairs. Anyway, alongside me is the very best hybrid I know. 50% man, 30% mop, 10% sheepdog, and 5% clerical error. It's all Ben Vanderveld.
Thanks. I am 95% of a man, so thanks for that.
I think when we hold the Worst Foot Forward Sports Day, we should have those games on the roster.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. I really want to see like the next level up from chess boxing, which is backgammon MMA.
Conor McGregor with my Aunt Lydia.
Two fearsome Irish patriots going toe-to-toe.
I am so excited about today's episode. First of all, if anyone is listening and thinking we sound a bit different, it's because we're doing our first ever Skype interview.
Yeah, it's our first ever transatlantic podcast. Yeah. I'm still giddy with Skype. like the fact that our guest is currently sat in St. Louis, Missouri. Our guest this week is responsible for more arguments, alliances, tears and angry fallings out in your household and mine than any we've had on before. He grew up in Virginia and then moved to Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. But he has made his name over the past 7 or 8 years as an incredible board game designer. He started by crowdfunding the wine culture game Viticulture, and along with his business partner he created Stonemaier Games. Since then, his lifelong passion for playing and designing them has led to games such as Scythe, Euphoria and Charterstone, which me and Barry are playing right now, and have garnered him an array of awards. So we're delighted to welcome our spirit animal, Jamie Stegmaier. Hey Jamie.
Thank you so much for that nice introduction. I really appreciate that.
You know what? He did really well in not calling you Jamie Stonemaier as well. It's very easy to just do that.
It's very easy to do, yeah.
he kept slipping into that, but you jumped that hurdle. I'm very proud of you, buddy.
I did, and all the while I was introducing you, I had the Stonemason song from The Simpsons in my head.
First of all, if people are listening who don't know your work, it's safe to say our guest Paul Flannery, who we had on about 50-odd episodes ago when we talked about the world's worst board game, is a massive fan of your work. So what he was talking about terrible board games, he was saying just play Scythe instead of Risk and things like that. So you've featured on the show before.
Got to ask, how do you end up becoming a board game designer? I work as a stand-up comic, and I think I ended up doing that because I watched other stand-ups going, yeah, I can definitely do that better than you. Is it the same with you when you played Monopoly as a kid?
I was playing games like Monopoly when I was a kid. I think it was more it was one of those things where I saw it and I was like, I not only want to play this, but I want to create my own things too. Mm. You know, sometimes I think I can't fully explain it. Like we have those creative outlets that we pursue because they're there. Yeah. And that was one of them. I started designing games when I was pretty young.
Scythe is one of the earlier Kickstarter ones that a lot of people model their Kickstarter board game launches now on.
Yeah. And I write a lot about Kickstarter too. So yeah. I have a blog where I write about it. And so a lot of people have taken some of the things that I've tried and experimented with, and they've implemented it in their projects.
And we always ask our guests, now we obviously know you're an excellent board game designer, but we also ask our guests what they are the worst at in the world. Is there anything you particularly want to fess up to? If it's playing board games, by the way, we will be staggered.
There are some games I'm pretty bad at, but one thing that came to mind, I mean, there are plenty of things that I'm terrible at. I think I mentioned to you guys before the show that I'm I'm single, so I'm terrible at dating. I'm terrible at relationships. And I'm pretty athletic in general, but volleyball has eluded me throughout my entire life. I'm terrible at volleyball. And volleyball,
beach or court?
Both, anything. Which is unfortunate because beach volleyball is a delightful game to play, you know, just casually on the beach. But I go to the beach every other year. But I am so bad at it that I can't have fun while doing it. I can generally find the fun in most things. So that's it for me. Do you guys have that? Do you have a sport that you are just so terrible at that you cannot have fun playing it?
Ben's, when we did our very first episode, we said what we were worst at, and Ben said riding a bicycle. It's not anything to do with cycling.
Yeah, it's too terrifying. And it pains me to say so, but I'm a terrible football player. Yeah. Both American football and proper football. Like, I'm not built for American football, and I panic under the pressure of having 10 more skilled football players running at me.
Whereas I went to the school sport was rugby, which I'm sure you're vaguely familiar with, and I am quite a slight and not terribly confrontational human being. So similar to you, but with even less protection on a soccer pitch, you can just like tackle people with your feet. On a rugby pitch, it's the entire body.
So I'm going to act more as a receptionist rather than a defender to this line. Through you come.
It's very noble of you to confess it. Clearly, then that's why you've turned to board games. You can keep your prowess on the board as opposed to on the pitch, on the court.
Exactly. So this week we're going to talk about the world's worst games. Now, obviously it feels wrong talking about just games with you, because really, we should be doing World's Worst Board Game, but our pal Paul got in there nice and quick, didn't he?
Yeah, but I'm sure we might touch on a couple through today. Certainly, I've written down a couple of notes.
Fair enough. What one World's Worst Board Game?
We picked Monopoly, funnily enough.
Oh, fair enough.
I've read with you, there's a couple of interviews with you, where you did play Monopoly as a kid, but you said you never finished any games of it.
Never officially. I don't know. I doubt many people actually have played by the exact Monopoly rules. And we definitely didn't when I was a kid.
There is that point that comes where everyone just goes, oh, look, the next person who does this is the winner.
Yeah, it's like school-ground football. Next goal wins, then we go inside.
Yeah.
First of all, going to go back to 1495 and King Henry VII. This is not the furthest we're going back in past, by the way, lads. In 1495, there is the first legislation restricting gaming in pubs.
Oh, wow.
And it declared that indoor gaming, which are disturbing to Tudor pubmen from their archery, should be banned.
Archery was more important to practice.
Yes.
I see.
I'm going to have a little look at pub games and drinking games. There is A bit of history about a local road to us. So about mile and a half down the road, there's a road called Bull's Pond Road. And it's always intrigued me, the name, and it turns out it's based on a pub that was owned by a Mr. Bull. And at the back of the pub, there were a bunch of ducks in a pond. And publicans could pay Mr. Bull to then take pot shots at the ducks.
Oh,
and
no.
I know. So it's like, mate, prepare yourself for a lot of animal cruelty in the next 10 minutes.
Tudor darts was really vicious.
Yeah, it really, really was. Yeah, no, that was the Tudor equivalent of duck hunt.
So they had,
they were just there going, I really wish someone would invent the Nintendo.
So before they had a bullseye, you had a duck's eye.
Yeah, they did. I don't know if in either in your part of America or America generally, there are all sorts of weird little local games, but the United Kingdom is rife for this sort of stuff. We have in Gloucestershire in the southwest once a year, we have the annual cheese rolling competition, where we take a giant hard cheese, roll it down a hill that is 200 metres high and sometimes has a 1-to-1 gradient, and people just roll and fall down it.
Have you seen any of the footage of it, Jamie?
I have seen that,
It's amazing. Yeah. I read about this a bit as well. The cheese is 9 pounds, and you're meant to try and catch it. Obviously, no one's catching it, particularly because the cheese gets a 1 second head start.
Oh, that's not fair.
And I read a quote from someone who took part, where he said, he described the event as 20 young men chasing a cheese off a cliff and tumbling 200 yards to the bottom, where they are scraped up by paramedics and packed off to hospital.
I mean, it's like if Wile E. Coyote invented the Olympics. It's amazing. Do you know that the people in Stilton Village in Cambridgeshire do something different?
Oh, no.
Now, Cambridgeshire, very, very flat part of the United Kingdom.
Cheese rolling much easier.
Yeah, so instead, they just have a wooden cheese and they just sort of gently roll it along the floor and then everyone goes home and has a nice cup of tea.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's like the yin to the yang of the Gloucestershire cheese rolling.
They're strange in Gloucestershire.
They are strange in Gloucestershire. Other daft events that we have in this country, there's the World Egg Throwing Championships in Swatton, Lincolnshire. The sport dates back to 1322. A local abbot ensured the attendance at the Church of Peasants by providing them the arms of one egg for each attendee. Okay. So far, so Christian. However, when the nearby river flooded, which prevented people getting to church, the monks would then hurl the eggs over to the waiting peasants, and the game has been played ever since.
Oh, so the goal is to try and catch it without breaking it?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
But there's also another popular version, which is Russian egg roulette, where participants select, they have five hard-boiled eggs.
Oh, yes.
And one raw egg, and you have to smoosh it against your face.
I feel like I've seen Jimmy Fallon doing that on his show.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I like the fact that Jimmy Fallon is carrying on a noble medieval tradition.
Yeah.
Wales is bloody good for some weird games.
All right.
Since 1980, in Llanwrtyd, probably.
Good effort.
Llanwrtyd, Wales in Wales, there has been the annual man versus horse marathon. But they do it over countryside, you know, that whole
hang
thing.
On, hang on, they're running a marathon,
yeah,
and it's men against horses.
Yes. And the photo I've got, the horse is not doing very well, because they're going through like really boggy countryside and it's really twisty turny and turns back on itself.
Right.
So horses are good at running fast, but they're shit for manoeuvre.
I feel like I really want to see horse man versus horse triathlon. try and get a horse on a bike.
One last little weird sort of rural game. The Basque people of northern Spain.
Sure.
They are quite cruel. In their Deportes Rurales, which is in Spanish, or Herri Kirolak in Basque, it's basically like their equivalent of the Scottish Highland Games, where there's lots of agricultural competitions for chopping wood and dragging things and lifting things and drilling holes.
Mm-hmm.
They also have the Antzor Jokoa, which is the goose game.
No. Do we want to know what this
just
is?
Not happy. There is the seaside version where they get a long rope and they tie one side to a pole in the quay and another to the mast, and from it they hang a goose upside down by its legs that is either alive or dead. And the aim
that's an important distinction for the goose, I feel.
Yeah. It very much is. By the time that the goose is involved in this competition, it knows that it's been cooked. And the game is to jump up, grab a hold of the goose's head, and yank it off.
Oh, no,
and
mate.
The team that pulls off the most goose heads wins.
Wait, there's a team? I thought this was one goose.
No. There are several geese that are lined up there. And meanwhile, the guys on the mast and on the quay have got to try and make the rope that the goose is hanging from move back and forth.
Oh, so tilt it and make it harder.
Yeah. Obviously, there is a land-based game where instead of on a boat, you're on horseback. You have to, presumably a horse on a motorcycle going past, yanking off geese's heads. The other version, which is even stupider, is called Okar Jokoa. That's the chicken game.
Okay.
You take a chicken.
That's harder, though, because chickens don't have the long necks that geese do.
No, they don't.
The easy game is the ostrich game.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't get their heads out of the sand. The chicken, you take a chicken, you bury it up to its neck, you then blindfold it. I don't understand why. You then blindfold
in case it peaks, Ben, obviously.
You then blindfold yourself, and then you have to find the chicken. And then again, the winner is if you can find the chicken and then pull its head
Whoa,
off.
Oh, come on. That's unnecessary.
Really unnecessary, but really funny.
Chicken finding is tricky enough.
Yeah, but my selection is going to be from an array of drinking games.
Right,
because
okay.
They are the worst kind of games. There is one called Toque, which is Spanish for touch, which is wildly popular in Mexico City. This is unbelievable. Vendors go from bar to bar with a machine that is rigged up to run from a set of batteries with two metal poles. And the players hold on to these metal poles whilst the controller slowly increases the voltage via the battery. and the player who can take the heaviest electric shock from a battery wins.
Wait, this is a drinking game.
This is a drinking game, not torture by the Mexican mafia.
Where does the drinking bit come into this? Usually in a drinking game, it's like, oh, you drink if someone does this. In this game, you drink if you're still alive at the end?
Pretty much. It seems really stupid to be playing with electricity and liquid and alcohol, at the same time. Yeah. There's that. There's one that I've seen in both American and British campuses called Edward Cider Hands, also known as Amy Wine Hands, where you take a 40-ounce bottle of liquor and just gaffer tape it to your hand.
I've done that.
You've done that? I love American drinking culture.
Did you win?
I've actually done it several times. Well, back in my younger years, yeah.
Oh, yeah, back in the younger years.
It ends up building, like, there's this wonderful sense of camaraderie if everyone is doing it. You have this goal, you have a specific goal that you have to accomplish, yeah. And you're all in it together. You can't go to the bathroom very easily, so because your hands are duct taped to the 40s. So you either have to get help from someone else, or you have to drink quickly enough that you can take off one of the containers. It's actually a lot of fun.
The tricky thing with camaraderie like that is you don't want to go to high five someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine that the number of A&E departments that are full of people just going, well, we got really excited playing Edward Ciderhands, smashed hands. What was your alcohol of choice when you played it?
I mean, the standard is a 40, is malt liquor, okay. which is pretty nasty. And so I would get like a nice beer, like the biggest can possible of a nice beer, and two of those, and take them to my hand. Excellent. We had one girl who only wanted to drink wine, so she found tiny little wine bottles.
Oh, she should have taped one to each finger.
But like, that's the choice of bottle's really important, though, isn't it? Because like, if you have a little wine bottle, they're really curved, and you can probably move your fingers a little bit. Where if it's like a Jack Daniel's bottle, like those squared off whiskey bottles, really cumbersome.
I want to see them do it with a Galliano bottle, which is like an Italian liquor that's like a baseball bat bottle.
I want a Jeroboam of champagne.
Damn right.
I had a few friends who did this as their way of just hanging out on the weekend. Like, it wasn't a big event. They just did it. And they took it so far that they started to wear adult diapers so that they wouldn't have to go to the – they could just sit out – they sat out on a porch all Saturday afternoon.
I feel like that's the point at which the fun has stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, I've played some long games of Risk in my time. I've always taken a break when I needed it.
That is true of any situation. The point at which you're wearing adult diapers is the point at which the fun has definitely stopped. If we're going to talk about mad drinking games, we do have to briefly go to Russia.
Of course.
Where there's a game called Bear Paw, where you have a large stein filled with the worst beer you can find. It's passed around the beer, and every time you take a sip, it is then replaced by vodka.
Oh.
And according to these rules, you continue until nobody at the table is conscious.
That's the game they're playing in Raiders of the Lost Ark, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's exactly what it is.
Right.
In New Zealand, there's a game called Possum, where you buy a 24 case of beer, you take them up a tree, you drink the beer, and the last person to fall out of the tree is the winner. But I'm going to talk about three historic drinking games, and one of these is going to be my choice. Right. Firstly, the very first drinking game is from ancient Greece, and it's called Kotabos. And it was very popular at Greek symposiums, so people would be lying around on, I want to say chaise longues, but they can't have been called chaise longues in ancient Greece.
Couches,
sure. And they were chatting about the latest philosophical tracts of the day. And once you'd finished your wine, at the bottom, there'd be like some wine yeasty scum.
Yeah.
And the aim was to flick that scum at a token holder, and that token would then fall into a bowl and would make a noise. It's like sort of shooting targets.
Okay.
Yeah. You're nodding, Jamie, like you've played this game.
No, I have not played it. I'm
all right, yeah. My favourite one, but not my choice, is something from 17th century England called a fuddling cup. And a fuddling cup is basically a big bowl with three holes in it. And the trick is, it's also known as a puzzle jug. And you have to drink from one hole whilst the booze doesn't fall out of the other two.
Oh, yeah, I've seen one of these. Yeah, that's the end. You're trying to, like, hold it, but the holes are in really odd positions as well, so you've got to try and angle it and put your fingers over that. Yeah.
But my suggestion for the world's worst game is an Italian game called La Passatella, which has its origins in ancient Rome. What would happen
are
is
you buffering?
This. Yeah, yeah, I am. Collectively, a group of people would purchase some wine. One person would be declared the padrone, or the boss, and another would be declared the sotto padrone, or underboss. And after all the players pitched in to buy wine, the padrone would be determined via cards or dice or like a version of paper, scissors, stone.
Yeah.
And the padrone was known as the master of the wine. And he would give some wine to his sidekick, and then he would determine how much wine each of the other players should be allotted whilst sort of basically hazing them and slagging them off.
So making them work for it. Not
yeah. Yeah. And there's a particular account of a game by a French chronicler called Edmond About, and he was in Rome in 1861, and he said of it, "It is a forbidden game, but in Rome, nothing is allowed and everything is done." And he said that in this one, the padrone was a handsome blacksmith who acted quite the arsehole. One person in particular, he kept picking on, and every time he asked to drink, he was told, "He shall not drink." And the teetotaler got angrier and angrier and angrier because he'd paid for the wine and the wine was there, but he didn't get to drink the wine.
Oh, right.
And then once the wine's gone, the loser called for a second game and he just got shafted again. And the guy who lost it called for a third game and he got shafted again. And so at the end, he basically screamed at the blacksmith the words, "May you die of a cold accident," drew his knife and stabbed him.
Wow.
And basically, the game would always be played with sort of knives around amongst thieves. This French chronicler About, when he had the game explained to him, then watched it, his response was to go, "So you'll pass your life in assassinating your friends?" And the players were like, "Yep, that's what we do in Italy." It was even played by popes.
Of course it was.
Pope Sixtus V. Was worried by the fights that the game
provoked.
The most
confusingly numbered Pope.
Yeah. And he was worried about the game, so he decided, like, okay, let's learn about the game. And he played the game with some cardinals. The Pope repeatedly found himself made Ormo, and Ormo was like the lowest person on the status track. And so it got to the state that he started hurling himself at his own cardinals because they refused to let him drink. And it was only at the intervention of some servants who went, "Pope, you really need to calm down," that it didn't end with the Pope killing several cardinals. Because it led to awful papal behaviour and constant murders in both ancient Rome and modern Italy, I'm going to go for La Passate.
Excellent. La passateia.
I want to start with like the one that's the closest to tabletop games. Mm. Technically, it is a tabletop game, but I doubt people think of it that way, which is a classic game, tic-tac-toe.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you guys call it over there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Knots and crosses, yeah.
To me, this is a ridiculous game because if both players know what they're doing, it will always end in a tie.
Yeah.
It's just a ridiculous concept for a game that it is impossible for someone to win if both players know just the basics of how to play the game.
Yeah.
And it is the most un-American thing in the world to have a game that can end in a tie.
Yeah, oh, that's yes. True, yeah.
And I hadn't thought about that. It does frequently end in a tie, but soccer is, you know, it can be entertaining. Watching tic-tac-toe turn out in a tie is not entertaining.
Oh, it's going to be in the next Olympics, right?
Right,
I would love it to be part of the next Olympics just to hear the commentary.
Yeah. He's taken an X. Middle square. What do you think of that move so far, Ben?
I think that's an absolute classic opening.
Yeah, it's a classic move, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, it's called the Treacle's Gambit, taking the middle square. Stegmaier has his head in his hands.
Yeah.
He knows there's no way he's been backed into a corner, but it is early days yet.
So I have a few that are slightly personal.
Yeah.
The first is fantasy sports. I mean, like fantasy baseball, fantasy football.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so these are games, I do fantasy baseball. So just yesterday, I gathered together with a bunch of friends and we drafted players. So it's as if we are managing a baseball team. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the season, we look at the stats for those players and we win or lose based on those stats. It's a game I love. I was hesitant to put it in the world's worst game category because I love this game. But it is, I can see from an outsider's perspective how ridiculous it might seem that we are pretending to be managers. And even yesterday when we got together for the draft, we sit there in silence for 2 hours.
It's a beautiful picture of men having fun, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Sitting around imagining if you had the control over these people.
Do you play any fantasy sports? Do you do that?
Do you do fantasy football?
I've not for a while, just because it consumes your life. That's the problem. It's not for like fantasy football. I used to play in my teenage years, and there's soccer management simulators that I have gone down the rabbit hole of, and they will consume your life even more. One of my mates did a football management simulator, and he took a team that were basically amateurs, and after about 25 years in game time, made them European champions. And every time he got them to a final, he would pause the game, go to his wardrobe, put on a suit and tie, and then sit back down because it was a final. And when he won the European Cup, he took his laptop out on an open top bus for the ceremony and like waved the laptop around because he was so proud of what he'd done.
That's amazing.
I think we could do fantasy politics.
I was thought you were going to say fantasy podcast.
Or fantasy. Oh my god. No, that'd be so meta.
I'd bags Mike Maron.
Yeah. Fair enough. Let's do that instead. What other stuff you got, Jamie?
So the next few also have a somewhat personal connection to me. One, so you, Ben, you talked about drinking games. And I think this is kind of adjacent to that category, but for a little bit more kid-oriented, which are, I don't even know how to classify it, but games where kids let their hormones thrive in some way. I'm thinking in the U.S., okay. I'm thinking of games called like 7 Minutes in Heaven.
Oh, yes.
Or Spin the Bottle.
Classics.
Basically an excuse to kiss the person that you want to kiss, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Do you have different names for these games?
I don't think 7 Minutes, because 7 Minutes in Heaven I know from like teen movies that I've seen. American teen movies where they get locked in a room with somebody else for 7 minutes.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
and
obviously
everyone else is outside the room going, oh, I wonder if they're kissing.
Yeah. Right. Obviously, right. In a Catholic household, that is 7 minutes in purgatory.
Yeah. I think, Spin the Bottle, I've definitely played. And Never Have I Ever is the other one as well, as a classic.
Never Have I Ever, yeah. Yes.
Have you played that?
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you have fond memories of?
Well, that's I was bringing up this one because I never played any of these games as a kid. I never did 7 Minutes
really?
In Heaven, never played Spin the Bottle, and I wish I had because it seems like a good time. But I did do Never Have I Ever several times as a college student, university student.
Yeah, that's when I came to it as well.
The most fun version of that is when you're playing with, I don't know, 10 people and everyone's got dirt on someone else.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're asking questions to out other people.
Yeah.
And it's almost like playing a game of battleships against the other person. It's like,
right.
Never have I ever sexually interfered with wildfowl. God damn it, Barry, you've got me out.
Yeah. Well, I've done in play that I've been in, it's been done as an icebreaker sometimes.
Oh, crap.
Wow. No, you get to know the cast. Yeah, because it tends to be a much more timid version because you're going, we don't really know each other. We can't. This gets more fun when people are able to talk about sexy stuff or like really embarrassing childhood stuff.
Again, I think that would be amazing for political hustings.
Yeah. Oh, you mean we're like, oh, yeah, next 2020, when it's Trump against, you know, whoever, Elizabeth Warren, just you get Anderson Cooper going, never have I ever finished building a wall I'd say I'd build.
So somewhat similar to this, too, since we have April Fool's Day coming up.
Yes.
I love, especially now I work for myself at home, and so I don't get to interact with people in terms of pranks, but I love a good prank. And I like when pranks are turned into competitions.
Mm.
And so there are two examples that come to mind. One is that there's a website called College Humor where they had an ongoing prank war over many years. Have you seen any of these
I've
videos?
I've seen the website. I haven't seen the pranks videos, though.
Yeah, it's two of the guys on the website, I think maybe two of the founders, they had an ongoing prank war that stretched over many years. They have videos about all of them. And they escalate more and more every time. And I think they, as far as I can tell, I think they stopped being friends eventually.
Oh, no.
Because the pranks just went over the top. They went too far. There was one where one guy went to a Yankees game with his girlfriend, and the other guy put a proposal up on, you know, the big screen of the game as if it was coming from his friend.
Oh,
and
no.
The friend did not want to propose to his girlfriend.
Oh, no.
There was a skydiving one. I feel like skydiving and pranks, you know, that generally takes it a little bit too far.
That's a real effort.
But it was very entertaining.
Did she
to
say
watch
yes?
No, She said yes. Oh, no. And then he said, I'm not asking.
And then he had to say no.
Yeah, that would end a friendship from where I am. That would definitely end a friendship. Yeah. There was an article online I read 2-3 years ago about two men. It's either two men or two families that have been playing hide and seek against each other for about... No, sorry, not hide and seek. They've been playing tag for about 30 years. And literally, one of them will drive up to like the house and can't go, hey, we thought we'd surprise you and come have dinner. Oh, thanks so much. I've got like a big carpet in the boot or whatever. And I'll open up the boot and then the son will jump out, go tag, and then run off into the sunset. And these people, they live in different states. It's amazing.
That's so good.
Yeah.
I want that to happen. Well, right, we have kids, can we just like make that their thing?
Yeah. That's a brilliant idea.
Because then when we don't want, like when we just want to like play board games and we've got our kids, we can just go, oh guys, can you just go and play the tag war that we've got going on for us?
But also we're going to end up being like the two old men in Trading Places. Every time one of our children impresses us, we're just like, there's a dollar for you. Also, I think when we have kids, we can also play Fantasy Parent League, where we go through the various children in various secondary schools and be like, yeah, I think I'll take little Jimmy for biology.
Yeah. Did you say they were making a movie of it?
Tag, yeah, I think it's called Tag. The trailer came out just last week.
Amazing. That's on the watch list.
Hang on, they're making a movie of the game Tag in the way that they made a movie of the game Battleships.
Well, they're making a movie of the story that you just told about the families that play Tag. Yeah.
No, because I think that's been done, Ben.
Yeah, yeah.
It was called The Hunger Games. Did you not see it?
Yeah, I love it when pranking becomes an obsession.
Oh, it's a spectator sport at that point.
We used to do it in my old office where we were. We did Secret Santa. You guys Secret Santa. Yeah, we have a secret gift that you give to someone. But we did that with pranks. So everyone would draw someone's name out of a bag and secretly prank them sometime in the next month. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty wide spectrum of time. You wouldn't know when it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun. It was way more fun than Secret Santa.
What was your proudest one?
I mean, some of the best ones were ones that I didn't do. But I learned that Adobe Acrobat, the software Adobe Acrobat, has a speech function where it can like read the document to you. And so I had one, this really isn't all that great, but I had one where a coworker went to the bathroom and I loaded up just a lewd document. I had Adobe start to read this thing and I turned off the monitor. And so she came back into her office to hear this very odd voice, just like, very lewd document to her.
The 50 Shades of Grey audiobook. I've just remembered when I worked at a summer camp in my old school for a long time. And, so we'd have like Irish kids and kids from around Europe coming to learn languages and doing sports and activities and stuff. And the staff, we would play a game of murder where you'd draw someone else, another staff member's name out of a hat or whatever. And the rules we set were you had to slit their throat. So between their jawline and their shoulder, their collarbone, you had to manage to make a mark with a permanent marker, but there could be no witnesses. So that was the rule. So you had to manage to get someone alone in such a position, you could make a mark on their neck and they were dead, and then they passed on the name of their target to you, and so you'd work through people like that.
Wholesome family game.
Oh, it was the best fun.
Yeah.
Because we were in a boarding situation, so it was a live-in summer camp. So the opportunities, day and night, I think the only safe space was your own room. You were allowed to have your own room as a safe space. And it got to the point where myself and two others were left towards the end of one of these, and I was carrying a marker in each pocket, a marker up my sleeve, a marker in the like the little belly pocket of my hoodie, and a marker in my sock. And I was at one point pinned to a counter in the cafeteria one night where we were getting water for the kids, and I turned around and someone had followed me in, and he was much bigger than me and pinned me with like the marker inches away from my neck and me holding away. And I managed to bring my foot up to my other hand, to my left hand, pull out the marker and get him on the side of his head.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's one of those life moments that you wish you were being filmed for.
Yeah, you're like, I will never be this cool ever again. Because just after I got him, he got me. He was like, I got you. I said, I think you'll find I got you first, sir.
Oh, very James Bond.
My final one a category of TV shows that are competitive TV shows. That is very odd that they're competitive. In the US, we have a show called The Bachelor and The Bachelorette.
Yes.
Have
you heard of those shows? Again, most of my knowledge of these American shows is through the parodies on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yes. Same here. I've watched these shows a few times, but not recently.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea of these shows is that you have a cadre of women or men competing for the affection of another man or woman. Mm. And it has always just seemed so odd to me that this is a competition.
Yeah,
that's true. You would compete to be the one. And at the end of these shows, they end with a proposal.
Oh, God. What, is it a full-on marriage proposal?
It's a full-on marriage proposal. Yeah, they're not contractually
obligated.
They just do it. It's what happened. It's what they've come to understand. And there's always an episode. I think it's usually one or two before the final episode. It's essentially the sex episode where the three final contestants, they're not told by the producers to do this, but it's just become the thing that all three of them sleep with the contestant. in successive nights, one has the first night, and it just seems very odd to me that this is a structure for a show.
Yeah, this is the producers come in and hand them their scripts. This is the bit where you go, oh yeah, this is the bit where you go harder.
Right.
Tell you what, I think the best reality type game show I've ever seen is, did you ever watch The Mole?
Yes, yeah.
The Mole, and so we've played Resistance and Werewolf, those sort of social deduction games, which tabletop gamers will know about, where there's a hidden traitor or a betrayer in the group.
They will ruin friendships.
Yeah, they will ruin friendships, but the tension they create is really palpable because you're really playing these roles. And for people who don't know, The Mole was based, I think, on a Dutch TV show, and there's been a few series in America, and the UK had a series of it as well, where it's 12 people, or 10 or 12 people, doing tasks like, okay, everyone has to bungee jump off it, or we've got a paintballing thing where everyone is to run the gamut of the paintball thing, and the more people who succeed at certain tasks, the more money is put into a pot, which at the end of it the winner will get. Mm-hmm. And every week they have a quiz about who you think the mole is, who's the person who's working against the team. And so every week there'd be like 10 questions, and the person who does least well on the quiz is the person eliminated, and works all the way down to the final three, where there's three people, one of whom's going to be the winner, one of whom to be the loser, and the third person is the mole. And it was great because you saw game theory and strategy in action because people would be deliberately sabotaging challenges, even though it was costing them money if they ended up winning it, because they wanted to look like the mole to make people think they were the mole to make them fail their quizzes.
God, it's a Stanley Milgram experiment, but turned into a game show.
It's amazing, and it's one of those weird things where you go, oh, you're a team, and in theory you're working together with one traitor, but the very presence of a traitor has made more people treacherous.
Christ.
Yeah, that's amazing.
What I would like to see is a mixture of The Bachelor and The Mole, where basically you have to pick one person, but one of them has a sexually transmitted disease.
And they're still going to be there for the sex episode. So.
Yes, they are. I'm calling it now. We'll definitely get picked up by Dutch TV. Definitely.
Is The Bachelor and those type of dating programs then your choice for the world's worst game?
They are indeed.
I'm going to talk a bit about board games. It would be a waste not to.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I think we chose Monopoly as the world's worst board game for a lot of reasons. One of them being that it's a lot of people's first introduction to tabletop games and board games in general, and it'll put so many people off the wider world of it. I'm sure you've had this where you'll bring a friend into your house or into a board game shop, and they'll see all these games they never knew existed. And,
absolutely,
and create and worlds that they didn't know were possible to create in game form.
Right.
Oh, like Ticket to Ride. There's a game about trains. You go, yeah, it's called Ticket to Ride. It's one of several games about trains.
Yeah. And the fact that, like, I have seen the coolest, suavest men and women turn into festering wrecks after 5 minutes of Ticket to Ride. And it's like, I'm better than a game about trains. Just you wait, mate. You try and get from Minsk to Lisbon whilst I'm trying to bisect you. Oh, that game.
Do you find, if you meet people who don't necessarily, who don't know you or don't know what you do, and then you say you're a board game player and they go, oh, I like board games, and you go, is it Monopoly though?
I get that sometimes. I also get it as a this is my job. This is my full-time job as a designer publisher. So sometimes when I always tread very carefully when I don't know if someone is aware of the greater world of board games, that it because that often comes up. They think that's what I'm designing.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And we've got such a hardcore group of friends who play games that if I'm talking to someone and they go, oh, you're doing a board game night, can I come? I love board games. And you go, you just have to text everyone, go, just so you're aware, guys, we're starting with Catan tonight and we're maybe going to play Ticket to Ride as well. Just to ease this person in.
It was really funny. We had some mates over to watch the rugby a few weeks ago, and we did have to like clear them out because we were going to play Charterstone. And mm-hmm. as we got it out and set up the board, watching the different looks on their faces, they were like, "How this?" It was almost like they were watching us program HAL from 2001: A Space Odyssey as we were putting out all the little pieces.
Yeah, because people are surprised that board games can look any different to, you know, a track and some dice in some cases.
Yeah, right. I imagine when you say I design board games, like me 4 years ago would probably have said, "But haven't they all been made?"
It's very true.
Yeah. It's like the books of the Bible. It's like we've got 5 books in the Torah. We don't need any more, mate. It's all done.
I read a bit about Monopoly tie-ins because there are now over 500 different versions of Monopoly in the world.
Wow.
Obviously, there's all the different sort of city subset versions of Monopoly, and indeed some of the cities that are covered are like you've got the big ones like New York and London and so on. But you can also get Swindon Monopoly for Jamie's benefit. Swindon is a city in the UK, a little bigger than Springfield, Missouri. So
oh, wow.
It's got about 180,000 people in it, but meriting its own version of Monopoly, it seems.
And it's—I mean, I don't know what American city it is analogous to in terms of its character, but it's imagine that an entire human resources department became a city, and that is Swindon.
There is Monopoly Horse Lovers Edition, Dog Lovers Edition, Cat Lovers Edition, Bass Fishing Edition, Inflatable Monopoly. .com edition, where you can buy such luminaries as Lycos, Alta Vista and WorldCom.
Oh, that dates that horribly.
UPS Monopoly, Boy Scouts of America Monopoly, Monopoly, the Century of Flight edition, QVC Monopoly, do not pass go unless you collect these shiny carving knives. Street Fighter Monopoly, One Direction Monopoly, Toys R Us Times Square Outlet Edition Monopoly.
Oh no, poor Toys R Us.
The specific shop in Times Square, that one.
Yeah, the mothership.
Yeah. And Puzz 3D Monopoly. You remember the Puzz 3D, like 3D jigsaws that you could do in the 90s? What better way to improve a game of Monopoly than make you have to tediously, over 2 hours, make a jigsaw version of the board in 3D and then play a game of Monopoly?
I am out.
And of course there were lots of movie tie-in versions of Monopoly as well. For example, the Prince Caspian, the movie, had a Monopoly set. The Batman and Robin movie, I Love Lucy, Disney Pixar's Cars 2, there was no Cars 1 Monopoly.
How can you play Cars 2 Monopoly without ever having played Cars Monopoly? You'll never get the plot line.
And my very, very favourite one is Sunmade Monopoly, the collector's edition.
Hold on, Sunmade is in the peanut butter manufacturer.
That's Sunkissed. I think Jamie will know who Sunmade are.
Is that the raisins?
The raisin people.
Raisins,
yeah. So you know that it's the red box with the yellow sort of the silhouette of the lady on it. It's the box of raisins you've ever bought will be Sunmade. Basically.
So what are the different places in Sun?
I couldn't find a picture of the board, essentially. I could find lots of pictures of the box, presumably many of them unopened. The Amazon blurb for it said, Sunmade, the world's favourite raisin, and Monopoly, the world's best-selling board game, have teamed up to create something distinctive in the dried fruit world. This twist on the traditional Monopoly is sure to be a favourite in your home for years. And I love these ideas of board games that do like mashups and they crossbreed with each other. One of my very favourites is Angry Birds Star Wars Jenga. That's so much mashup in one single thing. For avoidance of doubt, the box very helpfully prints it's based on the app, Angry Birds Star Wars.
What, on the Star Wars app, which was George Lucas's original idea? Surely to win at Star Wars Angry Birds Jenga, you just have to find a tiny hole at the top of the tower and pop something down it.
What you do is you have little catapult X-wings and you catapult little sort of Chewbacca version of birds at a Jenga Death Star thing and you try and knock it apart.
Is that the actual game?
Yeah, I think so. Have you seen it, Jamie?
I haven't, but I kind of want to play it now.
I'm with Jamie. That sounds not shit.
No, it sounds like a fun game, but just as a marketing strategy going,
right,
how many different cultural icons can we shove into one box?
Mate, I can see how enthusiastic Jamie looks about this. The next Stonemaier game is going to be a real change of direction.
I found another amazing game from 1968. So, you know the games company Ideal?
Yeah.
Maybe the most famous game they've made will have been Mousetrap.
Yeah.
Even if you're not a board gamer, you'll have heard of Mousetrap.
Brilliant game.
So, they had a massive success with Mousetrap, obviously, in the 60s. And I think they decided that what made the game a success was not the silliness of it. No, it was the fact it involved a mousetrap. So they invented another game called Swack, where it's like, it's kind of like Buckaroo. If the item's on the Buckaroo, you're taking it off rather than putting it on, and you're taking bits of cheese off a little platform, which is encircled by a mousetrap. A giant, like, metal bar, traditional mousetrap. You're taking bits of cheese off, and if you trigger the trap, this metal bar comes and smacks your hand.
Classic old-fashioned game.
Isn't it? That's what you want to introduce your kids to, is, like, try to steal stuff, and if you don't, the mousetrap will get you!
Did they develop it and make, like, a humane version where you would just, like, stick a child down to a massive sheet of paper and they had to escape?
Yeah, or you'd take them up and let them free outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love the idea that in the meeting after the success of Mousetrap, they sat there and going, what made this really work? Tell you what, guys, kids in the 60s are really in the year of Woodstock. It's mousetraps, guys.
Yeah, definitely in that. They should have a whole vermin extinction range.
Yeah. So rat poison, the board game.
Yeah. Fumigation. It's like frustration. You have the little globe in the middle and you push it down and a tiny cockroach jumps around inside it.
I also very much quickly want to mention the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness RPG, which is a role-playing game. Have you played any of these, Jamie?
As a kid, I played the Star Wars RPG a few times, but not anything since then.
For people who don't know, you inhabit a character and you have a sort of a book which will help guide you through their adventures, and you roll dice to test your abilities against certain obstacles you meet along the way. A bit like Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons. Isn't Time Stories essentially an RPG?
It's close. A little bit. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles RPG had the very first printing of it, they removed this in later editions, had a thing where if a character suffered a trauma, you would roll a dice on a neurosis table to see what would afflict them. And depending on what you rolled, you might develop a fear of animals, which for turtles is a particular horror that they would want to avoid. A fear of success, so essentially that player from then on would be trapped into trying to sabotage everything the team were trying to do.
So they become the mole, very good.
They would become the mole.
Which would give them double fear if they also had the fear of animals as well.
Yeah. But one particular thing was you could develop different sexual deviations according to this book. And included among these, predictably for the 80s, was homosexuality, along with fetishism, paedophilia, transvestism, exhibitionism, sadism, masochism, necrophilia, and nymphomania as well. Remember, this is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that you're playing as.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is what happened.
I mean, I'm just looking, like, Barry's got in front of him the rule book of this that he's found. And I always presume that with the higher dice roll you get, the worse a thing is. But the highest dice roll in here is voyeurism, or being a peeping Tom. And apparently that's worse than being a sadist, a masochist, or a necrophiliac.
According to the people who made this game.
Yes. According to the people who made this game.
Different time. It was before me too. One other thing I wanted to look at were arcade games.
Oh, yeah.
So I found some amazing arcade machines. The Tablecloth Hour, a couple of these are Japanese, so it may not be called the Tablecloth Hour, but in a better translation, but this is what it is called. So the peripheral for this machine has an actual tablecloth.
Oh my god, are you trying to do the magic trick where you have to whip the tablecloth off?
You're trying to do the magic trick.
I mean, that's the best arcade game in the world.
So it's got like a sensor that this cloth slides underneath, and on the screen of the machine are all these virtual, like, glasses and plates and things. And you're trying to pull out the thing without breaking the items on the screen.
Have you seen the most astonishing video doing the rounds on Facebook in the past 6 months? Which is, I think he's a Japanese guy, and he is lying down on the floor. He is naked, apart from over his crotch is a tiny little table with a tiny little gingham tablecloth on and a tiny little cup of tea. And then he uses what looks like a selfie stick with a hook on the end to grab the tablecloth and then whip it away, leaving his bits only covered by a cup of tea.
That's amazing.
And the look of concentration on his face, quickly followed by ta-da, is breathtaking.
That's amazing.
It's what social media was made for.
There's the Turnip Strength Tester, which is a Soviet game. Of course it is.
Yeah.
It's based on the Soviet fable of, the giant turnip, which the farmer tried to pull out and he couldn't pull it out, so he got his wife to pull him and she got their kid to pull her and so on. And so the picture I've seen is of these people in an arcade, like four or five of them holding on to this one guy, holding kind of a bit of rag stuck to it looks like a volleyball, actually, Jamie, in a little hole on this machine, testing their strength. But maybe the most legendary arcade machine I came across was Polybius. The story went around that in Portland, Oregon in 1981, this arcade company called Sinneslochen invented a machine they called Polybius. And after a month, it had to be removed from the stores in Portland where it was on, where it was available, because people who were playing it suffered from nightmares, blackouts, memory loss, and they swore off arcade games ever after they played it.
Oh my God, this is a Black Mirror episode, isn't it?
It's so cool. Allegedly, it was removed from the shops by men in black coats. They came along and presumably stuck it in that warehouse where the Ark of the Covenant
yes.
is. Top.
What
men.
Was the game?
No, apparently all copies were destroyed. Some people claim to own copies. One guy who says he owns it says, every time he plays it, my head gets warm and I have the urge to urinate. And it seems to be an urban myth, particularly because Polybius, the name, is the name of a Greek historian who said that historians should not report what cannot be verified by witnesses. So it seems like it was a hoax, some sort of social experiment thing. But I was looking at old games and I came across some games from the Edwardian and Victorian era. And particularly, a bit like the drinking games that you were talking about earlier, Jamie, just the 7 Minutes of Heaven and so on, these were games that were meant to be slightly romantic, that would allow you to let loose in front of each other. So the game Sardines, which is hide and seek where one person hides and when you find them, you mm-hmm. hide with them, that allowed you to be really close to somebody in like actual body contact. Blind Man's Buff, obviously, where you're going around and feeling people up. There's a game called The Ball of Wool or The Blowing the Feather, where there'd be either a ball of wool or a feather on a table and everyone would have their heads down and try to blow the item off the table, so you're all puckered with your lips around the edge of a table looking at each other.
I don't think I'd like the thought of being surrounded by a group all puckering at the same time.
Yeah, I know, it's true. There's If You Love Me, Dearest Smile, which you might have played as a drama game. Everyone sits in a circle, one person's allowed to smile, and their job is to go around and flirt with people and try and make them smile. You go, if you loved me, dear, you would smile.
That's a banging game.
And yeah, it's so good. And so you could just openly flirt with people in front of your friends. And one of my favourites is Reverend Crawley's game, which is basically like Edwardian Twister, where everyone stands holding hands in a circle, but not with a person either side of them. So with people across the circle or like a couple of people over, so your hands all get tied up in this massive mess. And then the objective is to try and untangle yourselves while holding on to the two hands you're holding.
I've done that one.
Have you done that? Yeah, it's amazing.
I've played that game, but Victorians really needed to just get on with it and bang, didn't they?
My favourite one of those was the Bellman, which is Blind Man's Buff, but in reverse, where there's one person who can see with a bell around their neck and everyone else is blindfolded. Which just sounds like it's got to be carnage, isn't it?
Yes, it does. I'd want to play that in the open air, though.
Yeah, no, in a really small space, just so many head injuries. But the game I am going to nominate is called Snapdragon, which is slightly less flirty. You would get a fruit punch bowl or a brandy bowl and fill it with raisins or maybe grapes or plums or something like that. When you had them in there, you'd add your big bottle of brandy into it. You'd dim the lights in the room. Everyone would stand around the table and you'd set them alight. Set the bowl alight so everyone's faces were lit up by the sort of demonic flames. And the objective was to reach into the fire and retrieve a flaming raisin from it and extinguish it by popping it into your mouth.
No.
Yes, that was the objective of the game. There was a rhyme that some people sung about it saying, with his blue and lapping tongue, many of you will be stung. Snip, snap, dragon, for he snaps at all that comes, snatching at his feast of plums. Snip, snap, dragon. And one commentator wrote, it provided a considerable amount of laughter and merriment at the expense of the unsuccessful competitors.
I'm a little bit disappointed that they're not ducking for raisins.
Yeah, I know, for sticking their face in, that would have been even better. Apparently they did play a game where you'd light a bit like when you drink a flaming Sambuca now, you'd light a nail or something and try and drink it without your hands and lift, and without, particularly in that era where beards were quite popular, an even more dangerous practice. Our three candidates for the world's worst game are Ben's suggestion of the Italian drinking game that drove a pope to distraction, La Pasitea, Jamie's suggestion of the strongly formatted and sexually driven The Bachelor / Bachelorette series on US television, and my suggestion of Victorian fire ducking Snapdragon. These are all excellent work, I have to say. I think I'm going to go with Jamie's choice, largely because the other two are games that don't necessarily exist anymore or have been sort of improved upon, whereas we're now in the 21st century and that the fact that shows like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette are still on and are so like fake and icky, and there's something really sexually politicky wrong about it all that just makes my hair stand up.
I'm starting to feel that a lot of this podcast is about hammering the shit out of mainstream American culture.
It is. Whereas, I mean, La Pasitea is kind of an interesting curiosity. It's got a Pope in it, which Ben will tell you, I love a Pope, Jamie. It's one of my favourite passion projects. And Snapdragon, I mean, it sounds really close to, like you say, like bobbing for apples and things like that. It's close. It's just a slight step beyond an acceptable game. Whereas, yeah, I think The Bachelor... And just, they're so fat. They all look the bloody same as well. They're all like chisel jawed, blonde haired, nice
shirt. That's just the women. Lazy, but had to be done.
So, congratulations, Jamie. The Bachelor is our world's worst game. Before we go, I have to give you some of the world's worst news of the week. And, well, listeners, we were an hour later recording this than we expected because we had arranged a time with Jamie before forgetting that the clocks had to go forward on our side of the pond. But if you think you had it bad losing an hour's sleep at the weekend, think of poor Roman and Max Piekarski, who are two brothers from Cheshire here in the UK, who run Cuckoo Land, which is a museum of cuckoo clocks.
Oh, God.
Where they have 700 cuckoo clocks on display. And they spend 12 hours putting all of those clocks forward an hour.
Oh, no.
So they didn't just lose an hour's sleep, they lost 12 hours at the weekend adjusting all of those times. The oldest, apparently the museum looks amazing from the pictures I've seen. They have, as I say, 700 clocks. The oldest one is over 230 years old, and the two of them have been running it for a long, long time. They're both quite elderly, but they still do repairs. That's where most of the income comes from, is repairing old cuckoo clocks. But they're having to fight off interest from German collectors and investors who want to take the collection from them.
Jamie, you must know about having to battle the German market. They are titans of board games.
So yes, a shout out to Roman and Max Piekarski and their 700 clocks. Jamie, before we go, where can people find out more about you and about your games and everything else?
The hub for everything is stonemeyergames.com. There you can find our Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, our Facebook, all that stuff. But it's all there at stonemeyergames.com. And it's largely there. A big part of the website is there to help Kickstarter creators. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer on Kickstarter, but it was a big part of my life for a while, and I still want to help people out from the things that I learned from that time.
Excellent. Very, very good. Meanwhile, we're all off to shove Ben in a mouse trap and leave him alone in a room with three buxom ladies. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Sounds like a normal Monday night to me.
Put that goose down.
I'll level with you. I'm still a little displeased that The Bachelor won.
I know. Bless them.
That says everything about the standard state of those horrible reality TV games, that literally forcibly beheading a goose with your own bare hands is still better than The Bachelor.
Thanks so much to Jamie for doing the show with us. Please go and buy some of Stonemeyer's games. They are without doubt my favourite board game publisher. I heartily recommend them. As well as which, check out Jamie does blogs and stuff and vlogs on YouTube where he reviews other games and things. So yeah, he's all over the Twitters and Facebooks and places.
And what a cool thing for us to meet a guy who's given so much pleasure to us. And also, guys, I don't want to pat our backs, but that was our first ever Skype call.
You're feeling pretty smug about this.
Yeah, I mean, I did 0% of the technical research, so hats off to Barry for making a cross-Atlantic Skype call with a genius work.
If you did enjoy the show, find us on Facebook, if it hasn't already found you. We're there as Worst Foot Forward.
World's worst data harvesting company. Got it in one.
We're also, you can email us, worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com, and find us on Twitter, @worstfoot. Ben is @BenVandeveld, and I'm @BazMaxDay. Now, if you already follow us on Twitter, you might know that a couple of weeks ago, we had our World Cup of Worsts. And this is the first one of these recording since that.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, everybody, who came and played along with us.
It's about 3,500 of you
we
voted.
3,184 votes over the course of it all, which led through our first 64 worsts. We whittled it all the way down to a grand final between Monopoly and Mrs. Brown's Boys. Appropriately enough, given we talked about Monopoly yet again with Jamie, Monopoly emerged the winner, your world's worst thing ever.
Couple of issues with that. Not issues, but things around it. Firstly, Is Monopoly worse than the American penal system? I don't
capital
know.
Capital punishment cruelly knocked out in the semi-finals.
Yeah, I know. Well, at least it was knocked out before it was killed.
Yeah, and
I'm really glad that Mrs. Brown's Boys didn't win. It would be the most this podcast thing if something that neither of us actually suggested ended up winning.
Yeah, and of course, commiserations to all the humans out there who are listening. Of course, we sadly fell at the quarterfinal stage. To Monopoly as well, the all-conquering Monopoly, which I just note, by the way, it barely topped its group in the very first round. I think it tied for the top of its group, along with Bullet Ants, the Bullet Ant Initiation Ceremony. It was a parade for Monopoly to the final from then on in.
Yeah, it was. It was almost as though they'd got a chance card to go directly to the final, do not pass goal, collect all of the votes.
Or it was almost like they had a very well-organised online campaign by Paul Flannery, who has originally suggested, so congratulations to Paul. And by the way, if anyone wants to know how seriously we did this, if you didn't see it, we did record a Facebook Live video of us in suits doing an official draw for it.
What are we doing with our lives, Barry?
I know, it's very worthwhile. Roll on episode 128.
Yeah, we're going to roll through this all again, and then we're going to put the winner of that competition up against Monopoly and watch Monopoly win again, thanks to Flannery. Now, what's coming up next week?
Next week, the wonderful Daniel Bai, theatre maker, who is going to talk to us about the world's worst political theatre. Ben has worked with Dan in the past, and if you haven't seen any of his work, he does. He's amazing. Usually one-man shows, often one-man shows anyway, that he creates and devises himself around the world and the world we live in and our relationship with it. And he talked to us about the world's worst political theatre. There's a bit of Shakespeare in it. There's some of the Holocaust in it. That's probably all you need to know.
Yeah, something for all members of the right wing of the Conservative Party. See you next week.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.